Good morning and welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 20th Perek, Perek Chof of Sefer Yeshayahu. This Perek is really quite an anomaly. It comes in the middle of all the foreign policy nevuahs that Yeshayahu is giving. We've talked about his two prophecies to Bavel, two prophecies to Moab, the war of Gog and Magog. We saw a little bit of Mitzrayim. This Perek seems to be following up with the nevuah to Mitzrayim, but it's much more immediate. And it's actually given much more of a dating system, which is very helpful to understand this. So I'm just going to focus on the six psukim which make up this perek, and then a lot of questions about understanding it in context. It's a very short perek, but it has a lot of depth. So we're told that this perek occurs when Taratan, who is apparently the general or one of the officers in the army of Sargon, the king of Ashur, comes to attack Ashdod. Ashdod, of course, is in the coastal plain, the area of the Philistines, Pelashas. On that day, Yeshayahu was given the following prophecy. He says, Leich upitachta hasak me'al masnecha. Remove the sackcloth from on your loins. V'nalcha tachloitz me'al raglecha. Remove your shoes from your feet. And he went arum v'yochef, naked and barefoot. And for 3 years he went as such. And Hashem says to him, it should be an os umofes. It should be a sign to Egypt and to Cush that is how the king of Asher will take you and your peoples, young people and old people, all naked and barefoot as captives and slaves. And on that day, when the glory of Egypt and Cush has been removed, that's the day when this island will say, Hinei koi mabotenu asher nasnu shom le'ezra. Look, up till now we looked there as our place of salvation. But how can we now find refuge when the places we sought refuge are being taken captive? That's the end of this parak. Very short, very disturbing prophecy which is being described over here. So a few things just to appreciate. First of all, the time balance. Well, what's going on in terms of the actual chronology of this parak? So it is interesting. Chazal assert that Sargon, in fact, is the same person as Sancheriv. Chazal, in fact, say that he has eight names, and putting Tiglath Pileser, Sancheriv, Sargon, all into one. This is fascinating because later on, Chazal do this as well when it comes to the kings of Persia, much later on Achashverosh, Artaxerxes. So we're going to see, it's interesting, Chazal sometimes, it sounds like, conflate these characters into one. And it is a debate among the later Mepharshim whether that means to say literally or not literally. Meaning to say, in the actual Assyrian chronology, there is actually four separate kings who are being conflated into one over here. And so it's not clear that that's what Chazal intended to mean, that they were one person. Nonetheless, there are the Mepharshim on the page of Tanakh who do take this literally. So for instance, the Radak says this is referring to Sancheriv. And if it refers to Sancheriv, the time that this is occurring is when Sancheriv came to besiege Jerusalem. And remember, in the middle of the siege, there was this attack from Tarheka of Cush on Assyria. They retreat a little bit to conquer them. And it's during this period of time that Sancheriv goes and destroys Pelashas. And that's when the Nevuah is referring to. So this is a much later prophecy, deep into the times of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, around the times of the siege of Jerusalem. However, if we're just to take this on a literal level, without the Chazal over here, because Chazal seem maybe conflating these characters in terms of an idea, meaning to say they may all be equally evil, they may all be equally deadly, they may all equally HaKadosh Baruch Hu's shliach, but assuming that maybe they're not the same person, as some of the modern-day thinkers, modern-day Balei Machshava as well on Tanakh suggest, that maybe over here, if we take this in terms of the chronology, just to appreciate the four generations. Tiglath-Pileser III was really the first person who brought about the rise of the Assyrian Empire in the way that we witnessed it. And he lived from the year, he ruled from the year 745 before Common Era to the year 727. Following his rule, there was a person called Shalmaneser V, who took his place from 727 to 722. And finally, after 722 to 705 is the rule of Sargon II. Sargon II was the one who exiled the Aseres HaShvatim at the very beginning of his rule. He cleared sort of the closing nail in the coffin of the northern kingdom. And then finally, in 705 to 681, it was Sancheriv. So just to appreciate this, if we're going to take this literally, there's Sargon, which is what the Pasuk says. Sargon was a separate king to Sennacherib, and he came before Sennacherib, which means to say this episode happened earlier on in the rule of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Just to appreciate this, before the siege of Jerusalem. If that's true, I can come back to that in the end, what the significance of that is. Nonetheless, what is actually happening to Yeshayahu? So the Radak says it is not possible that Yeshayahu is walking around naked. Absolutely impossible that this could happen. What must be going on? And he gives the other examples. For instance, Hosea is told to marry a prostitute. We'll get there. Yechezkel is told to eat certain types of bread and shave his beard and his hair. We're going to see lots of times where the Navi actually becomes part of the Navu in his actions. The Radak says that's absolutely preposterous that any of these Nevi'im would do such things. It must be that this was actually a view, this was a vision that they were experiencing. So in their vision, they saw themselves naked, they saw themselves marrying this woman, they saw, right, this is what's happening in their vision. In fact, the Mora Nevuchim in chapter 46 says the same thing, as is the Rambam is famous to do, to say that this is simply a vision, cannot be what actually happened. But Abarbanel says, and he says in extremely sharp turns, he says, are these people shleimim das? Are these people really with the same picture, the same perspective of Judaism to say such a thing? He says, when it comes to Yechezkel flying over Jerusalem, then maybe it's very hard to know how Yechezkel got from Bavel to Yerushalayim. So maybe that was a vision that he was having, that rather than him being simply lifted over Jerusalem. But over here, it's physically viable that Yeshayahu did such a thing. It's crazy that he would do such a thing, but it is possible that he did something and therefore actually something which physically occurred. Whether it means to say that he was fully naked or whether he took off all his outer garments and all that, and it was left as a sackcloth underneath, which some of the Farshim suggest, is a debate. But nonetheless, he's obviously doing something which is pretty shocking. He's walking barefoot, he's looking disheveled. This is a very, very intense prophecy. What's going on over here? It sounds like from the Tanakh, the prophecy is a prophecy about Egypt. It's about Kush. Kush is an area in North Africa, the Sudan, Ethiopia area. So these are two countries, right, sort of neighbors to the land of Israel. But it's strange, meaning to say, if that's true, why is he giving such a prophecy to them? The Malbim discusses why it is that he actually needs a sign in the first place, assuming that this is actually physically happening. Meaning, why can't he just tell the people what the message is? So the Malbim points out that when you have a nevuah, which is just words, not just words, but when it's just articulated, then there's a possibility of change, there's a possibility of tshuva, like Yonah and the city of Nineveh. However, when it comes to this particular thing, when there's an actual sign, a physical sign done, that makes that the prophecy is irreversible, based on the words of the Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, that when Gzeres Irin, when metaphysical ideas or decrees come from heaven and they are encapsulated in physical actions, they become irreversible, and that's what he's trying to do over here, to make this an irreversible decree. But we should be wondering to ourselves, but why is it that he needs to do this? Meaning to say, if the recipients of this prophecy are Egypt and Kush, why is he going to such far extremes? So fascinatingly enough, Rav Yoel Ben Nun and Rav Ben Hillel, in their Sefer on Yeshayahu, say a brilliant, brilliant idea, and that is the following. We actually, if you follow through Assyrian history, what's actually happening over here is in the year 715 of the before Common Era, this is when the king of Ashdod, his name was Azuri, this is all in the annals of their history, fought a rebellion against the Assyrian overlords. And when they fought this rebellion, what ended up happening was Sargon II sent in his forces under Tarton to quell that rebellion. We know that they replaced the king Azuri, and they replaced him with a loyal Assyrian whose name was Yaminai, whose name was Achimatai, who was a Assyrian loyalist. However, in 711, after this happened, the Ashdodim actually had a rebellion, and they killed this Assyrian representative, and they replaced him with a fellow called Yamanai. Who took his place, and the rebellion started again. They started seeking coalitions to fight Assyria, and it is then that 2-3 years later that Assyria, Sargon himself, came in, rather than just sending Tarton, came in to actually destroy and completely level Ashdod and put Assyrian soldiers as a military dictatorship there afterwards, after these two rebellions. And these rebellions took place about two, 3 years apart from one another. The first one under the Tarton quelled, and the second one which Sargon II quelled. That makes a lot of sense then, if you think about it, what Yeshayahu is doing. Remember that Yeshayahu, when speaking to the northern kingdom, when speaking to Ahaz, and to the northern kingdoms, he told, specifically Ahaz of the south, actually, he said, Ahaz, don't make a coalition. Don't join the king of Israel. Don't make a coalition with Assyria. Don't play with fire. Keep low, keep under the radar, and keep doing mitzvot. That's the only way to be saved over here. And Ahaz did not listen. Ahaz brought in Assyria. The king of Israel made friendships with Ritzin of Damascus, of Aram, and they were ultimately destroyed. Ultimately, Israel was exiled, and Ahaz was attacked and weakened drastically. What could be happening over here is that as Ashdod, the immediate neighbor, we're talking the Gaza region right now, Ashdod, where Ashdod is today in Israel, as they are attacking Assyria, they are seeking a coalition. Who is their next door neighbor is Yehuda. What is Yeshayahu doing? When the first rebellion happens, he's wearing sackcloth and he's saying, don't get involved. Don't answer the calls of the Gaza region. And then finally, when the second rebellion, when between the rebellions, when there's a new rebellion that takes over and they're trying to now fight against Assyria again, Yeshayahu goes to further extremes. He takes off the clothes. He's not wearing his shoes. Why? Because he's saying to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who's the king now, we'll get to Chizkiyahu hopefully later in chronology, that Chizkiyahu, don't make the coalition. You're so strong. Hold your breath. Wait. They're going to destroy Ashdod. Don't be part of that destruction. And that's what seems to be the success, and that's what happens in this prophecy. Finally, as we close this, well, last point just worthwhile thinking about is at the end of the Perek, when he is making his point that Israel will no longer seek refuge from Egypt and Cush, he says, "Va'omar Yoshev Ha'i Hazeh," the dwellers of this island will say. Now, Israel, generally speaking, geographically, is not an island. Israel is a landlocked, except for on the western front where it's next to the Mediterranean. So what is going on here? Why is it an island? Says the Malbim, because they are isolated from all their friends. They are not together with all their neighbors. And that's exactly something which was true then and is true now, which reminds us that our only neighbor, our only ally is upwards, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.